We are going to continue the hour now by turning our attention, first of all, to the recent spate of mass shootings across the nation, which has gotten everyone talking about what can be done about it. That conversation has branched out, obviously, as it always does, in many different directions, including gun laws, including policies and programs and initiatives to address mental health and more. We're going to talk about mental health right now, not just in that context, but in the context of what officials and experts are warning is a crisis of mental health across the country, particularly affecting young people. Mitch Prinstein is the director of clinical psychology at UNC. Right now, he serves as the chief science officer at the American Psychological Association. He's the author of a terrific book called Popular, which everyone should read. And recently, he co-wrote an article in Scientific American with Kathleen Ethier of the Center for Disease Control about this particular issue and what we know about it and what we know works to address it. And I'm very happy to welcome Mitch Prinstein to join us on the air to talk about it. Mitch, thank you so much for being with us today. Good morning.
Thank you, Aaron. Thanks for covering this important topic.
So I read the Scientific American article the other day, and it was really striking. And the most striking thing about it was literally the first sentence. Young people in the United States are experiencing a mental health crisis. Tell us about that. What do we know about it?
Well, it's a crisis that started long before the pandemic. The fact is we've been neglecting mental health for decades, and children are paying the price for it now.
Is it getting worse?
Yeah, so during the pandemic, we definitely saw that numbers were getting worse. A remarkable number of kids are experiencing depression, loneliness. Rates of admission to the ED for suicide has increased. And not all kids are experiencing it the same way. We're definitely seeing disparities with kids from minoritized populations, sexual, gender, ethnic, racial populations especially, bearing the brunt of the mental health crisis.
When we talk about a mental health crisis, you mentioned a couple of kind of ways that impacts kids and effects that has on kids and young adults and adolescents. What are some of the other effects that we see? What are some of the impacts of just kind of this widespread struggle that folks are having with mental health?
So we're seeing that both kids and adults are really having a tough time, which means that some kids are experiencing more exposure to violence or conflict at home. Kids are experiencing more bullying and victimization and loneliness at school. But, you know, as so many people saw during the school year, it's just hard to concentrate. Kids are having a hard time feeling hopeful, and they're experiencing this in the context of all of these global crises and challenges. So it's really hard to get kids to be motivated and to be able to fulfill their just normal, you know, school and social responsibilities in a day.
One of my favorite local nonprofits is the Skajaja Fund, and they work usually to provide funding for kids to do extracurricular activities. And I was really struck recently by a conversation I had with Karen, who runs that organization, and a couple of months ago, where we were talking about just coming out of the pandemic and getting back to in-person school again. And she said, you know, I've been talking with principals and teachers and administrators about what we can do, and all of them are universally saying the same thing, which is, what can you do to bring joy back into the classroom or to bring joy back into the schoolroom? And that was such a very specific phrase that she used. And she said, so many administrators are using that exact same phrase, like the just a lack of joy in the school building or in the classroom in a way that we've never seen before, and they're reaching out to anyone and everyone to try to address it. And this speaks exactly to what you're speaking to as well.
It's such a great point, and it's really true. I mean, in the school districts that we work with outside of the Triangle, we're being told that kids are literally lined up down the hallway just waiting to talk with a counselor or a social worker. I mean, usually these are folks that are already overburdened, because there's so many folks that need to speak with them. But never before have we seen people lined up, you know, just waiting for 10 minutes to talk with somebody.
Speaking with Mitch Prinstein, again, Chief Science Officer at the American Psychological Association, UNC psychology professor as well. So what do we know about policies and practices and programs that can make a difference in addressing it? Where do we start?
Well, there's so much that needs to be done. I'll give you three things. One, our country spends $6 billion a year to make sure that we have enough physicians to attend to the physical health needs in the right specialties all over the country. We spend 1/750th of that amount in this country for mental health. It's just remarkable how much we are not investing in ensuring that we have enough mental health providers and to make sure that they're equally distributed across rural, suburban, and urban areas. The second thing is that when people finally do get in to see a mental health professional because their child is in crisis, there are so many different treatment options available, but only some are backed by science that we know is likely to work. It's so important that parents are educated to know how it is that they can find the treatment that's most likely to help their kids when they are seeking therapy. And then third, I mean, we have so much science that can help us prevent mental health difficulties before they even get started to really help, inoculate kids against stressors. But these are not brought to scale. They are not generally funded. And that's just a real shame because imagine the same for physical health. We would never just let a vaccine kind of sit on a shelf. We would, we would invest in prevention. We would help people understand the behaviors they need to engage in so they can avoid experiencing a crisis.
So what does prevent people from suffering mental health issues?
So, we can teach kids emotion regulation skills and social competence. They have adaptive, socially supportive relationships. Some mindfulness skills so kids can learn how to kind of cope with stress, some scientific literacy skills as well, and cognitive reappraisal, which is basically a way of saying that we interpret stressors as due to what actually made them occur rather than internally and kind of blame ourselves. If we taught kids those five different skills, we could probably avoid a huge proportion of the mental health problems that we see throughout middle and high school.
The other thing that you speak to in the Scientific American article, and this is something that I've been hearing over and over again in the context of the mass shooting issue and what are the causes of that and what can we do to address it, is social isolation, like the extent to which kids are increasingly isolated, and certainly the pandemic exacerbated that. What are some of the things that we can do to address that?
I mean, it's kind of funny that we have to say this, but kids have fallen out of practice with their day-to-day in-person interactions, not just because of the pandemic, but also because of the reliance on more electronically mediated ways of interacting. So we've got kids that are feeling really socially anxious when they're in the presence of other kids live in real life. And they have a hard time engaging in conversation, controlling themselves when they experience normal kind of peer conflict. And then a lot of kids who are feeling like they don't have a community, people who have the same identities as they do when they're in a school context. And as we're seeing, states making it harder and harder for kids to kind of express and discuss that identity, it really exacerbates the problem because research clearly shows that a sense of community and belongingness is so important to promote adaptive mental health.
Speaking again with Mitch Prinstein. So, turning our attention to what can we do? If I'm a parent and I've got kids, or if I'm a teacher and I've got a classroom full of kids and I want to make sure that they have the resources that they need or the skills that they can use that you mentioned, what's my first step?
So I think the first step is that we got to talk about mental health more openly, and I think we're doing that, especially this generation is open to doing that. So it's on adults to kind of meet kids where they are, which means to be open and to model and express, how we're all coping right now. And what are some of the things that are normal reactions to a very abnormal situation? And what are the ways that we cope with feeling stress and distress? I think that that really normalizes things for kids and helps them understand they're not the only one that feels that way, and to really share adaptive strategies of how to help. The other thing we really need to do is, of course, make sure that people who are experiencing a crisis, who are having a hard time getting through the day, finishing up their work, or having adaptive social interactions, they need treatment from a trained mental health provider. There's actually a nonprofit out there. It's called the Society of Clinical Child and Adolescent Psychology. They have a website called effectivechildtherapy.org. And That's a website that's just a public service free website to teach parents about which approaches to treatment have the most scientific support.
What can lawmakers do?
Well, love to see this at the federal level, but we could be doing it here in North Carolina as well. Let's fund more mental health providers. Let's fund more in-school, school-wide, grade-wide, even classroom-wide prevention programs. We know how to do it. Let's do it. And let's do screening for mental health difficulties. I've done that here in North Carolina for years. We can go into a school district and screen for suicidality, and invariably we catch dozens of kids who are acutely thinking of injuring themselves or ending their lives, and no one knows about it. We could be doing this at a statewide level and really helping and saving a lot of kids before they engage in pretty dangerous behaviors.
If people want to know more about those prevention skills that you mentioned, those kind of emotional coping skills, either for their own edification, either for my own edification or for that of others, kids in their lives or anyone else, where can they go for that?
There's so much great information that's out there, and a lot of psychology societies that promote that information. The American Psychological Association, the Society for Prevention Research, are just a couple that have a tremendous amount of really excellent resources out there. I'd also recommend the association, the Foundation for Suicide Prevention, AFSP, has great resources that school administrators could use to think about how to talk about suicide and screen for suicide in their own schools.
Speaking again with Mitch Prinstein, and as we start to wrap up this conversation, anything else that folks need to know about this issue or what they can do?
I mean, I think it's so great that we're talking about it, because it's something that is still, unfortunately, exists in the shadows. We don't talk openly about mental health, even though about 80% of people will experience a diagnosable mental health disorder at some point in their lifetime. We don't talk about it as openly, and we really should. I think that conversations like this and conversations people can have with their own social networks can really help people feel that they're not alone in the struggles that they're dealing with for their kids, and that kids aren't alone, and how hard these past few years have been for them.
Find out more about Mitch Prinstein online at his website, mitch.web.unc.edu. Mitch Prinstein, thank you so much for being with us today, as always.
Thank you.